You're listening to The Carol Cox Show on 1080 AM K108.
Good morning. Welcome back to The Carol Cox Show. Thank you for joining me. This is yet another day here in Honolulu. And again, beautiful sight. I'm going to make sure I put some pictures on the website so you can see what I see sometimes. And really nice. But going to pick up on some old subjects, and a lot of you wrote to us regarding the last week's both stories on city worker Favela and the cats and the Humane Society's increase of fees. And thank you, some 10,000 of you actually went and express concerns, or either looked at the listen to the podcast and what have you. So let's keep them coming, and at least we'll get informed some kind of way, even if it's half the way. But I enjoy having it up there, and everyone can see what's going on. And again, you make your own decisions as to what you do, how you react, but hopefully we can give you a little information to draw conclusions and make these decisions. But I played that song, Michael Jackson, with the because it's a good song and it takes me way back, and Looking Through the Window. Well, some of you might recall that I've talked about the city, and this is probably unrelated, but just a good song and an ugly subject, but the city and county of Honolulu. There's many issues in this this discussion, and they are, we have people that work to work for the city, whether they're in rubbish or refuse or environmental or road work. They didn't sign on to be exposed to injuries and safety or have their safety concerns stripped and exposed to life-threatening situations to get the job done. So specifically this morning, we're going to talk about the manner in which we've shown that the city purchased some 7 vehicles for trash pickup. And you may recall, if you've listened to the show, or you can go to carolcox.com, get the complete details and background of this, because I'm going to be jumping around. But they purchased 7 new refuse trucks for bulky item pickup. And those trucks were parked, hidden away up at Halava Facilities Yard, because the trucks are not functional. And one of the main reasons they're not functional is that in purchasing the trucks, they only required that the seats be forward-facing, didn't express concern or have specs that say that it must accommodate comfortably and safely 3 people, a crew of 3, which is what happens on a bulky item pickup truck. They didn't express that. So we raised the issue. There's KGMB did a story on it, and you can go back there and Google that, and or there's a link to it on carolcox.com. And you'll see city officials denied. I think the guy's Wesley Chan. He denied that it was a safety issue. It was something else. But nonetheless, more than $1.9 million, $1,900,000, I should say, that they spent, and they sent workers back to the plant in Minnesota. And as you recall, I talked about the provider, or the one that won the bid, was purchasing tickets on behalf of, and I guess they claim that they reimbursed this company, to make sure that the workers' wives got to the Mall of America and they got to see the Minnesota Vikings and a bus straight to the those were the important things that they focused on. But they went back there, supposedly, to inspect the vehicles. This is after they've already written the specs. So you can see something's crazy about that anyway. But when they returned here, they couldn't use them and can't use them. And recently, again, they said, well, the trucks are going to be out on the road in 30 days. Well, that's 30 days has come and gone maybe once or twice. No trucks on the road. Then they say, well, we're pressing out the issues with the concerns of the computer, and we got to make some adjustments and tweak them, shakedown. Okay. But it's never a safety issue of concern. That has never been a problem. That is something that Carol Cox manufactured and came up on his own. And that was, you know, how these guys off the handle, off the wall, draw conclusions when they're not informed. You know, that's the message they want to give you to about myself and others who question their inability to manage our affairs properly. So you take these guys, and we move forward here. Just on Friday, the last week, they assemble a crew of three men in one of these fancy trucks. And one man is sitting on, I guess we'll call it the cowling of the engine or whatever. It's a seat, however you describe it. But if I can describe it as the workers have described it to me, as we did before, and I'll do it again, is that the individual riding in the middle, because the seats won't accommodate, but they meet the specs of forward-facing seats, but they didn't require them to make sure the seat had space, ample space, and proper seat belts to accompany one human being in safely. So this helper, you got the driver, you got the helper, two helpers, and one helper is sitting in the middle. And that one in the middle has his head lying, resting against the rear windshield or rear window. And his feet are up over the cowling and up into the windshield. So they assemble this team, and they're driving down the road, going to pick up trash. And as others say, well, they were going to look at the computer to see if it would work. And try to see how these trucks work on the road. Well, they never made it to the pick up any trash to put on any trash on the road, because you see what happened, as the workers and the union had told them, and as I had reported to the city officials, which they already know and knew, but they denied it publicly and lied to you and me on TV, is that the driver applied the brakes at some point. This is the report that I'm getting. And apply the brakes. The gentleman in the middle, his feet were in a position where it basically broke the windshield. Now, imagine if they were at a higher rate of speed and going down a hill or whatever the situation could have been. They could have been loaded with trash. But his feet broke the windshield. This is completely what we had predicted, completely what the union had expressed concerns with. But because they were so busy giving their money to special people and making sure that the wives of the workers got to go back to Minnesota to the Mall of America and to see the Minnesota Vikings, and their wives needed to see how the trucks are made, that they forgot one key concern. And that is the safety of these men. And as I've said, just because you work and get a job to haul or pick up rubbish or work in that capacity, your safety concerns can't just be thrown out the window by management. And apparently that's what has happened here. Management is trying to conceal its inability to do good and to manage and purchase and spend our money properly. So you see, the window is kicked in, because when you're sitting like that and you've got long legs, and by the way, this will come to a surprise to management. I did, in fact, go upon learning of this a couple of an hour or so after it occurred, this incident occurred. I contacted the city and wanted to get pictures of that truck and that incident so we could record and I could share with you, the listener. And I went to the facilities maintenance and spoke with Mr. Robert Premiano. He is one of the top managers there. Kind of a nice fellow, but he's more eager to carry the company's banner regardless how wrong they are. He is indoctrinated, and this is what we have in management. If the top echelon is over busy working on the rail and mining other things, you leave the 14-year-old to babysit the 3-year-olders or whatever. That's the kind of situation we have with the city government now. You see, our mayor is busy dealing with the grown-up issues, and he leaves a babysitting to the people in the lower management. And so I talk to Premiano, and I'm asking him, you mind if I go in and take a picture of the truck? I know that it was brought here by mechanics, and then explained what I knew. And looking me straight in the eye and says, no, can't do that, Mr. Cox, because it's a safety concern. You see, if we allow you to go inside the bay or inside of my shop, it could pose a safety risk to you, a hazard to you and my workers, so I wouldn't want to do that. Well, can you take my camera in and take a picture of it for me? Well, no, I can't do that because, you see, we're still, it's under investigation. Well, can you confirm that, in fact, the employee's foot went through the windshield? Well, we can't say that either because it's still under investigation, and we just can't make any draw any conclusions on to how it happened. Okay? So, as you can imagine, well, are you going to take pictures to record and so that it may be a manufacturer's problem or something could be wrong or the specs not right or it's a design flaw and maybe all of the trucks poses a risk to the drivers and the workers? Well, no, we're not going to take any pictures because, see, we normally don't take pictures in these situations. Oh, you have them all the time? Well, not saying that. We just won't take pictures in this. Well, don't you think you should record this? And you might have to talk to the manufacturer. Maybe you need to take legal actions, but you don't have any proof and you throw the glass away and what have you. Are you going to interview the workers? Well, that's not necessary. Folks, this is your tax dollars and my time to spend to be taken and spun like a little wind-up puppy to be jerked around by these people. So just because there are good people in this world, and I know factually there are more good people and honest people in this world than there are crooked and corrupt and people that just go along to get along. And that being the case, go to carolcox.com, and you'll be able to see the picture of the worker's foot in the windshield. Just so happened, while Premiano is wanting to carry the banner and protect and cover up the city's poor management and disregard for public safety and the workers' safety, the workers apparently are concerned with their safety. And I'm hoping that HIOSH, I'm personally going to send a letter to HIOSH and ask there be an investigation because, you see, in this case, the city was warned. And in this case, the city says it in their own documents that there is a concern for the poor seating conditions, and it poses or presents a safety concern in their own words, but yet they ignored that. So who in their right mind, who would reduce human beings to nothingness and put them in that predicament? Now, that's the worker. What if that windshield had have broken, as I said earlier, alluded to, and the glass fell in the lap of the driver? How many tons of truck do you have? What if it had 8 tons of trash or 6 tons or 4 tons of trash in it? Going careening down the hill with the windshield broken and the driver can't see. Your family coming up the hill and that's the last thing you see is a streak of yellow. All because our city managers were too busy trying to pay political favors and not stick to the true process of procurement that should have been that if these trucks arrive, that whoever it was that just bothered to say all we need is front-facing seats should be fired. But there's no consequences. This young man, I'm told, that whose feet went through the windshield, not through it, he pushed it and it broke when they applied the brakes. And told now he's on industrial because he hurt his back and his neck or something to that effect. So you and I now going to pay. It was nearly $2 million for those trucks. Now the price goes up in the form of sick leave, industrial, or what have you. So imagine now, this is just the one truck in a fleet of many that are broken and can't get anything done. So I don't know. I'd like to hear from some of you. Do you think it's improper? What do you think the union should do? I mean, I know this is a day and age that unions, people are frowning on them, but this is exactly why unions need to be in place. This is exactly why unions need to file lawsuits, take action, and get away from. And this is a warning to the unions, too. Stop driving around the state capitol and the city hall honking your horns to bring in jobs so that you high mucky mucks in union can go play golf and in the golf tournaments, and while the little guy is stuck with his foot in the windshield, and we're exposed to such dangers as the public. Maybe you need to revisit and convene a meeting to say, what's our purpose in the union? Is it to protect the workers, or is it to protect our own butts and the good times that we have? Shop stewards, there is absolutely no way you should tolerate. And when you know, they took pictures of the men in these trucks early on when they arrived and showed the pictures depict the cramped conditions. They depict the unsafe conditions. And yet, union leaders allowed them to go out there on the streets. Not to mention Premiano. I'm not angry at him or have issues with him. That's just the way the system is now. The system cares nothing about you or me or anyone. It's all about them. And you cannot believe. When you look at this picture, they're lucky. So go to carolcox.com, and it will be the first picture that you see there. And there's this big foot in the window, that, and it's all fractured. And that truck is about, I don't know, I'm guessing, more than $200,000 that we pay for it. So this is not the old foot in the door. This is a foot in the windshield. And I just can only tell you the proof that we are no longer in control of our government. It's when a man will stand up and have the ability to look you straight in the eye and tell you, well, I can't let you take a picture of the truck because it poses a safety hazard. But the whole reason for me being there is that the truck is a safety hazard. And all I wanted to do was document it. I even offered Premiano to allow me to notify me, call me, and I gave him a number and let me know when he backed the truck out. I would stand on the sidewalk and with my lens, telephoto lens, and take a picture. Didn't want to do that. So I suspect they didn't want anyone to see this because, you see, they've already lied to us over and over again. Then they spent our money, and then nothing works. So there's seven trucks, folks. More than $2 million now that not in the fleet and working. And as you read the cool line, you saw, if some of you, that they talk about the number of trucks that I had reported earlier. So that's why you see this situation out there. And it's unfortunate. And I'm hoping that the workers stand up for themselves in this situation. Premiano didn't want to even show the picture, and probably will, the way things work in this town, I envision or anticipate, and this is sounds silliness, but I could see the report reading something like this. The worker's shoes possibly were too big for his feet, and so therefore he had to place it. It was not a safety issue. It was a decision on the worker that he placed his big feet in the windshield. And we believe there was adequate and ample space for him to put his feet on the dashboard. That's what I think you come to expect from city managers. Because it's only $2 million. What the heck? You don't owe the public any responsibility. You don't owe them any explanation. You know, we the public are just a bunch of people who got deep pockets, big bucks, and don't care about the way things are run in this town. That's what they've concluded. And that's why everyone's out running around taking care of the rail, you see. And these other things go unaddressed, unattended. And something needs to change. I can only tell you that I was nauseated standing there talking to our friend Premiano, because in one sense he was right. My presence in the maintenance shop would have posed a risk. And that risk comes in the form of transparency and showing you, the taxpayer, how silly they are. And possibly if we had a responsible mayor in Carlisle and the city manager, if they were to really get down and knuckle down and start addressing some of the real issues, Premiano wouldn't be so casual in offering and advancing the explanation that he was in the interference and not willing to even call me or take my camera, saying they know there's a need to hide from you and the general public. But that's what is going on, and I'm going to take a little break here, and then we're going to talk about last week I talked briefly about city employee Kurt Favela with a contract. He's a contractual person, and we're going to come back, and I'll talk about, I want to share something with you and regarding after speaking with you, I was able to obtain court documents where he's being sued and accused of fraud. Now, again, these are simply the fraud is there. It's a court case. He's not guilty of anything, and as I checked, he had not responded to this complaint, but. Again, I've posted all of that up at carolcox.com, carolcox.com. And I invite you to go there and look at this, and you'll see. And we'll talk about it in a bit. I'll take a break here, and I'll be right back.
We fell in love, high school sweethearts. Love was so brand new. We took the vows of man and wife forever collide. I remember how we made our way, a little patience, the times we prayed. Can't imagine that this love is through. Gotta run for shelter, gotta run for shade. It's too hot, lady. Gotta cool this anger, what a mess we made. So long ago, you were my love, oh my love. stop and feel the need. Funny how those years go by, changing you, changing me. I remember love's fever in our hearts, girl, and in our minds. And imagine that this love is through, feeling the pain, girl, when you lose. Oh, it's too hot, too hot, too hot, baby. Too hot. Gotta run for shelter, gotta run for shade. It's too hot, too hot, lady. Gotta cool this anger. What a mess we made so long ago. You were my love. Shelter, gotta run for shade. It's too hot,
too hot, too hot,
lady. Gotta cool this anger from this mess that we made. It's too hot,
too hot,
too hot, lady. Gotta run for shelter, gotta run for shade. It's too.
Okay, welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. A little clearing of the throat there, and on that subject of the trucks, one of the things also, the worker complained that the seatbelt was digging into his side and possibly causing bruising and what have you. So I don't know about you. It may not be an eventful thing, but how would you like to go to work? And by the way, you are a captive audience if you work for the city, if you step out of line, so to speak, and that line is a very thin line. If you speak up for your rights or if you demand something in there, what you have within city government is a mafia of type that you can't even begin to imagine. You see, if you cross anybody, and that crossing could be simply that, look, my seatbelt is too tight and I shouldn't be riding with my feet up on the dashboard as a third member of the crew. And as a result of that, you're not a team player, and your career goes crashing through the window, so to speak. It's a painful experience. That's the best way to describe it. And imagine that. So take that, and you go, and you know, people put chemicals out. Imagine you being on a crew, a bulky item pickup crew, and you go by, and many people have cancer and have treatments of with leukemia and all of those things, and so they need medicines, and medicines that has radioisotopes in it and radiation. So you pick up a garbage can, a trash can, whatever the political correct way, and fluids from there are just, and you get contaminated. If they're not willing to bill you a proper seating, what do you think about them having a radar detector of radiation on their trucks? Some say, well, we have one, a Geiger counter at the facility where they dump. But that means you've picked it up at the beginning of your route and you've driven around with it for the 2 hours as you're clearing your route. Then you go to dump it. Then you find out that you've been radiated. That's just one of the things. And it's something. And then to top that off, imagine you have a fleet of trucks that are some 43%, as they disclose themselves, is not functioning, just taken out of the fleet because they're broken. What other percentage do you think is just marginally working? And then you are put in these situations and to drive around. And you know, Honolulu has some very interesting streets, very narrow. A lot of them are steep. You go up Wilhelmina Rise and St. Louis Heights. Imagine being the trash man driving that. Imagine being a crew with a three-passenger crew, feet in the windshield. Imagine that. You're talking about getting on a roller coaster without an adult. You have three adults in there and who's still exposed to danger. But anyway, that was just to talk about that. But I want to share with you, when I last talked to you, I went to look at some court records. And the reason I did this was it wasn't to pick on Kurt Favello week. And it's not to do that, and it would be improper for me to sit here or at any place or any occasion to strike out at someone's character or assassinate them without. And I did call him and have attempted to reach out for him to interview him, but he, no response. So what I did is in looking at his personal basic contracts with the city, which is of concern, doing some Googling, we find out that there's a court case. And this court case that shows that June 28th, 2011, a civil action was a case was filed. And the law firms of Edmonds, Verger, and Omanaka on behalf of plaintiff Melanie Burroughs and against Kurt Favella and Donald Lee Favella. The complaint states that, and I'm trying to synopsize this. I don't want to bore you with the greater details. You can get those at carolcox.com. It's posted there. The complaint states that Melody Burroughs is the daughter of a deceased person named Paul Williams. Mr. Burroughs died on or about June 28, 2009, at the age of 79 in the city and county of Honolulu. Sometimes after Mr. Burroughs' death, his daughter learned that on or about December 7, 2007, by purported warranty deed, her father, Mr. Burroughs, conveyed his only residence, a lot and house located in Ever Beach, to defendant Kurt Favella as a tenant in severalty. For some time before Burroughs' death, the defendant Kurt Donnelly Favella acted as caregivers to Mr. Burroughs and lived in the Ever Beach, in his Ever Beach home. Now, again, this is not me talking, and Mr. Favella, if you'd like to call in or come on the show, I'll give you ample time. This is not maiming Kurt. The suit states, in part, quote, the Favella defendants were aware of Mr. Burroughs' advanced age and his reliance on their assistance and taking advantage of the fiduciary relationship that existed between the Favellas and Mr. Burroughs, through undue influence and fraud, persuaded Mr. Burroughs to execute a deed conveying the property to defendant Kurt Favella. The actions of Favella defendants, as alleged above, constitute intentional fraud and conversion. The actions of the Favella defendants, as alleged above, constituted intentional interference with plaintiff's expectancy of inheritance from her father. Anyway, if you can imagine what this, you get the gist of it. Now, I came across that in the queries with some assistance of others, and I also find there was an obituary, and this is what really heightened my interest in this. And the obituary, and it was posted in July 12, 2009, and Paul William Burroughs, 79, of Ever Beach, died June 28, 2009, born in Elmira, New York, retired from Reynolds Recycling Company, survived by, and follow this, folks, survived by caregivers Kurt and Donnelly Favella, a son and a daughter. grandchildren. Now, I've read many obituaries, and I have never, ever in my life, and I could, if you've, I've personally not seen that. You may have seen it, where the caregivers are noted and their names are noted, while the families, if you know that they have a son and a daughter and grandchildren, maybe you would like to name them just out of a kindness and courtesy given the circumstances. Now, that was me. My radar goes up and goes on when that doesn't mean there's any guilt or innocence or issue here. This is just what I'm sharing with you. That caused me concern because it was very curious that this would happen in this fashion. So I pull up the records, and as you can see online, the city records show that, in fact, the house was transferred over, the property was transferred to Kurt Favela, and you can go from there. But again, what does this have to do with any of this, the contracts and what have you? Well, see, Mr. Favela was also at one time the chairman of the neighborhood board. And secondly, he was also a candidate for District 43 as a House of Representatives. And if you have this kind of character and behavior going on, should it say something about what we would lend ourselves to? The contracts that he has received from the city, as I reported to you, the city canceled his contract and then lied about it by saying they didn't, but they were withholding the letter after I disclosed that I know there's a letter exists. Canceling his contract, terminating it, but they renewed it. Why do you suppose they renewed his contract when he was reportedly absent more than 45 days in the earlier contract? So when you put all of this together, again, he's not guilty now of that complaint. There's no one has proven his guilt, and he hadn't responded, as I said, when I checked. But it bears watching. It should be something that we be attentive to. And that is what is going on out there with city workers. And hopefully they come back and decide and do the right thing. Now, there's other issues related to this, and we'll see. I'm getting a number of calls to say that there are other individuals that have found themselves in same similar predicaments where they start off being caregivers of sickly and elderly and have engaged in the practice or converted some or all of their properties while excluding the elderly's family and not informing them. So, again, that's not to impugn Mr. Favela's integrity or his character, but a court records speaks for themselves, and we'll just wait and see what happens. But 524-1080, if you got a question or comment in the last couple of minutes here, and I'm hoping that we, in the next hour, I'll have Attorney Tony Lucretio, and we'll be talking about some various issues of global warming and the potential auction of state lands at Koke on Kauai and other things. So this is a very interesting thing, and I had many things I wanted to talk to you about with this this situation. The you got the sewage that they're shipping to the other facilities from Sand Island. See, there's a consent decree from 1995, and it's mandatory that that all of the sewage and the sludge, and it should be the pelletized and what have you, and Cinegro. But due to cost over and change orders, the price went substantially higher, millions of dollars. The question is, are they actually delivering any of that pellet? And if they can't manage Sand Island, what are they going to do with the pellet? Does that mean they're actually managing all of the pellets that's generated or all of the solids that's generated by Sand Island? Does this comply with the consent decree by shipping it to other plants? So we might be looking at a bigger issue here and a bigger legal issue that either they know of it and recognize it, or the city officials, or they're trying to pull a fast one. Because whatever goes into Sand Island, that's the volume of water and the waste that is counted. And they were to meet the conditions of the decree. And supposedly 60% of the sales or something to that effect, I don't know the exact conditions, but it's supposed to go back to the city from some of the sales or recovered from the disposition of the pellets. And so if it was calculated that way and the EPA says, okay, Synagro is going to do this and that's part of the consent decree and that would satisfy, what then is the problem? Good morning, caller. Comment or question?
Thanks, Mr. Cox, for taking my call. I was just listening to your program. It's a very interesting program, especially with this, I have to call him a character, or this, because his name is Kurt Favela.
Uh-huh.
He really seems, with the two issues of this contract being canceled by the city and them denying that they did it, and this also, this seems like he's allegedly perpetrated fraud on an elderly gentleman, otherwise the gentleman's daughter, I think that's what he wouldn't be suing them. How is it that a person like this is able to get away with, allegedly get away with what they're doing? And also, wasn't his wife, I don't know if you can comment on that, but doesn't his wife work for the city?
I don't know. I didn't go on a search for that. I thought this was enough because, you know, how much is overkill if our city officials aren't concerned with the information that's presented to them here. I think the rest of it, you'd just be talking to a stone wall, and clearly they don't get it, because if they cared anyway, they would have acted and been open. And when I say they now, I don't want to be speaking in a generic sense. They, the ones that lied about this is the Corporation Council. They're the one who has the letter and told them not to give me the letter, but also ordered or advised them not to even mention that the letter existed. And the only reason that we discussed the letter of his termination of the contract is that I disclosed that the fact that I knew that there was a letter terminating the contract. But even then, the Corporation Council chose to hold the letter and inform them, advise them not to release the letter.
I see. So my problem is that how would they issue another contract to a person who's been absent for 45 days? It shows a lack of job performance. So it's just an act of corruption on the part of the city Corporation Council.
Yeah.
And so it's amazing. You know, they take our tax dollars and they just do anything they want to with it.
Well, you know, as I had said early in my earlier reports, even our current governor, Neil Abercrombie, actually, friends of Neil Abercrombie gave $2,000 to Favela's campaign. And then there's another interesting footnote there is that in his report to the Campaign Spending Commission, he reports that Favela reported that Mr. Burroughs had donated $1,000 to his campaign. So, you know, that this thing is, he's a Democrat man, and also the public should know that he's been a pro-rail. He piqued my interest when I was trying to figure out how is it that this gentleman, he could be in all of these. We know that he was on the neighborhood board, and also he resigned because of some hoo-hoo or some issues there that were raised about ethics and all in that predicament. I don't want to bother go into that, but that's another concern that pops up.
Yes, sir. Just one quick question. In regards to the garbage trucks, we pay these officials who are supposed to be professionals, competent professionals, to check out these trucks or check out the manufacturer and to make sure they meet the specifications that the city workers are going to need or for the trucks to do their jobs. And it doesn't seem like they're doing that. I mean, how else could you explain, not providing the right seating for the third person in the truck, one of the helpers? So, you know, I know you've talked about it already, but it just seems like these people are inept, and they aren't that professional. They don't seem to be doing their jobs adequately, and then we're paying for them and their wives to be taking these junkets, to be, inspecting these trucks. It doesn't seem, it seems like they're entertaining themselves more than doing their due diligence as far as keeping city workers safe and being frugal about our tax dollars, make sure our tax dollars are spent well.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, I appreciate the show, and I hope others do too, because you bring a lot to the table. You let a lot of us know what's going on in the state and in the city, and it's really educational. This is why I listen to you every week. Appreciate you being there for us. Thank you.
All righty. Thank you. But again, they are spending our money. The city government, they're definitely spending our money. And I wished, if you recall, there was the Ethics Commission found that Mr. Fred Burgess, for example, a superintendent, was improperly behaving on the recycling of metal during work hours. And there was monies that were they said that he should be paying back. Hanneman rehired him. Now, again, that's a different subject, but I will tell you from what I'm seeing, and I've reported this also early in earlier shows, that the city and county of Honolulu's refuse and other agencies of branches, they suffer from something, an old disease, folks. And I'm here to tell you, and anybody that think that this is a thin-skinned black man speaking or who has a chip on his shoulder, you have a degree of racism within these ranks that, unlike anything I've seen or you've seen, there is a gentleman who, it's public knowledge, he has a case, and he's filed. I mean, if he sneezes, they write him up. He's an African-American gentleman. If he sneezes, he has basically threatened mankind, and so therefore he's going to be persecuted. He's actively involved in a court case where, instead of resolving the case and acknowledging these things are factual and they've proven, they chose to tell him, well, you can resign and we'll give you a little money and you can leave. But there are complaints that have been filed where the top supervisors are accused of information, and I've heard it firsthand, the conversations that were taped, where the supervisor is allegedly being accused of having sexual behavior with the security guards. So imagine what is going on with that. So I'm here to tell you, within city government, while they don't wear sheets and they don't call you the N-word, for some of you people that are colorblind now in this society, it's still about us out here. And some of this, some of these people just simply, hey, you're a trash worker, let's get past the race part. You work for the garbage department, so you're nothing and nobody, but little do they know these are human beings. They've seemed to have forgotten that these, when you put them in the trucks and send them down the road, you are putting someone's father, someone's son, someone's brother in harm's way. That's wrong. And no matter how you twist it, whatever the explanation is, it needs to change, and I don't know how we're going to fix it, but you, the taxpayer, need to start speaking up and asking questions, because if it's a case of racism and there's a lawsuit, it consumes time and money. if it's an act of poor choice in selecting cars and equipment and trucks, it's poor management. It's costing you time and money as taxpayers. And in this society, we shouldn't tolerate any nonsense now. And but I can take you and show you that I've spoken to a number of the African-Americans that work, which is a handful that works for the city and county of Honolulu, and they catch hell. So anyway, you don't have to take my word for it. If you want more details, give me a call, and I'll share with you the specifics. So talk to you in the next hour, and we'll see you. Hello.
Come a time when you feel real nice and you want to let someone know that you really appreciate them. All you have to do is just moan a little bit for them. You get somebody to take them. You see, no time for wasting, baby. We've gone all through those moves. Offering satisfaction, darling. Girl, I'm giving you all my love. See ya. Anytime is the right time, baby. Come on and take my heart. It's all yours if you want it, baby. My heart is tearing all apart. I say,
ooh, you can have it.
Yeah. If you want it. Come and get it, baby. But if you want it,
you can have it.
I'll come and get it, girl, yeah.
If you want it.
Yeah, yeah. See, darling, there's no time for wasting, baby. Come on, please, make up your mind. Good loving is so pleasing, baby. Girl, I'm giving you all my time. You can have it if you want it. Just come and get it, and baby, it's yours, yeah. I've got to give it if you want it. I know that you're gonna love it. Just come on, girl. Huh. Oh, I knew you'd like it. Oh, baby, you got me saying something like, listen now.
Okay, good morning again, and welcome back to the Carol Cox Show, second half. I have my guest, Mr. Tony Lucretio, attorney, and we're going to be talking about a number of issues I introduced earlier. We're going to talk about DLNR's, the new bill that was passed allowing DLNR to sell or lease land. And we'll be talking some global warming issues and how it affects some of the communities in the Pacific. So, good morning, Tony. Thank you for joining me.
Good morning, Carol. Thank you for the opportunity. It has been a while.
Yeah. So, right off the bat, let's talk about this the DLNR issue, the bill that regarding the land and the sale of land.
I think that this is probably one of the most important bills to have been passed for a long time, not necessarily for the purposes it was passed in the legislature, but what it does for a serious problem here in Hawaii. What today's presentation is an experiment to see if a vehicle like this one, which has got a great many listeners, mm-hmm. and a great many thinking listeners, can respond, analyze, and determine whether what's going to be presented has value, mm-hmm. and then to call the governor's office and say, appoint somebody to sit down and listen to this program, this proposal that's being put forth because it can solve lots of problems. Let me go over very quickly the situation we found ourselves in for years, and anything on the horizon does not stop it. We have the highest percentage of working spouses, two people, working just to maintain cost of living. A major cost of living is housing.
Mm-hmm.
The main result, contrary to what most people think, of homelessness is a very simple one. People can no longer afford to pay rents. That problem gets exacerbated by the military. And we have a situation where we have lots of military. It's one of our major job areas here and income areas. But there is not enough housing. So the military, supported by government dollars, goes into the private market for housing. That eats up available housing, raises the rental price, and puts more people either in homelessness or on the edge of homelessness.
Mm-hmm.
The bill that was just passed opens the door to a solution. And if we can get the governor, DLNR, we've got a meeting coming up with DLNR, but we're not allowed to talk about this at at that meeting. We've been gag ordered as to what we could talk about, what we can't talk about. Basically, the state's biggest asset is that it has thousands and thousands and thousands of acres of land.
Mm-hmm.
The bill allows that land indiscriminately to be leased, sold, etc. My proposal is that we need to go back in our history in America where land grants
mm-hmm.
were the thing, the great land rushes of the Old West, etc. We need to have housing developments occur in which the basic highest cost, the land, is nullified by the state giving land grants, either collectively so that a subdivision can be developed or individually. That would permit this percentage. We have the lowest percentage of anywhere in the United States of home ownership,
mm-hmm.
despite the fact that our residents are working two jobs. We need to get people into housing. If the land grant idea works, then people could go to associations that would be set up and apply for housing with the land issue, the land cost, being put into a long-term lease, very little, with the option to purchase that land as their economic situation changes. This gives us, I think it would be a surprise to most of your listeners, the highest density people per square foot of anywhere in the United States is Honolulu.
Mm-hmm.
Because families cannot afford, once they get married, et cetera, the kids get married, they come back into the same square footage.
Mm-hmm.
This situation is a dumb one. We have the resources to resolve it. The new bill, we don't have to do the fight in the legislature. The new bill gives DLNR absolute authority. We will ask at a meeting tomorrow that a separate meeting with the chair and the board to discuss this idea. We would like your visitors to call DLNR
mm-hmm.
and say, hey, listen to these guys. We need housing. We need to stop this homeless problem, et cetera. That leads me into the next area, which is Hawaii's next biggest problem, and that is that we are the most isolated landmass place anywhere in the world. Therefore, the crisis that is coming up, in which fossil fuels costs are escalating like crazy, Hawaii stands to lose its contact with food sources, supplies, et cetera, because mm-hmm. the cost of bringing things here. We have the resources here, sun, wind, land, to resolve those problems, to do agricultural programs that do not make us so dependent.
Mm-hmm.
The last situation is one that the Honolulu Advertiser did a story on several years ago, is my concept of highways in the sky. One of our big problems is the bulk of population in Hawaii is on this island. Smaller populations are on all of the outer islands, so that when a financial crisis like we've just experienced occurs, the outer islands take the hit the hardest, but we see here the homeless mm-hmm. figures jumping, increasing. I've suggested that a Hawaii resident airline be created, that the Federal Department of Transportation supply the funds for building new airports, for providing planes, so that like other places on the mainland where the money is spent on interstate and intrastate highways, our highways would be in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
For $5, $10, you would ride the transporter, the commuter airplane.
Mm-hmm.
You could live on Kauai, work here. You could be a student who lives on Kauai, go to UH. The state would save a fortune in duplication of services. When you take those three concepts, the resident, Hawaii resident airline, the land grant, and taking a look at how we resolve food, et cetera, cost, we have a solution. There is no reason why we should be in any problems.
Mm-hmm.
We have great resources. We have this huge bank of land that without hurting our environment, we can set aside thousands of acres and become the greatest housing building state in the country and change our people from homeless to owning their own homes.
Mm-hmm.
The huge percentage of our population are homeless, meaning they don't have a home. The percentage of their income is paying rent. That has got to stop. And with this new bill, that will stop. It can stop.
Mm-hmm.
If we generate the noise from below, you have some very noisy listeners,
right,
who are tired of not having expendable income for education for their children, food, et cetera, et cetera. The problem is only getting worse.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it.
Yeah. See, one of the, as I listen to you speaking about land and government land, I go to Barbara's Point, or I go to Waikele. That's land that was in the hands of government. And, for example, Hunt has 500 acres at Kalailoa, for example. They want to do solar panels. Why aren't we focusing on using some of this land? If it's that easy to hand it to others, why not incorporate it into Honolulu housing or the state housing? And I know that many of them out there are going to say, well, we don't want to be a welfare state. Well, forget all of that. The fact is that people are homeless, and whatever we don't want is what we got right now, chaos.
The American way was land grants. There was massive land in the West,
mm-hmm.
and the way that land changed ownership was land grants. You'll remember the movies of people on their horses and covered wagons rushing to claim land.
Mm-hmm.
The American way to start out and change the situation was land grants. So when people say, oh, well, that would make us a welfare state, if that's true, we were a welfare country
mm-hmm.
when we did that. We must look at the problems and the way to solve those problems.
Mm-hmm.
You're absolutely right.
Well, I'm sure there's some will seek to take land, and there's a, I guess, those that can afford to buy the choice lands will be easily and able to purchase it. And what about the guy who has no money? How do we guard against abuse in that? Any proposal?
Well, I think the way the proposals are, you would lease the land. You would have so long to put up a structure. The structure would, you would earn points if that structure was self-sustaining.
Mm-hmm.
Solar, wind, growing your own food, etc. Once you acquired so many points, you would then have the right to purchase the land, convert it from a lease to purchase.
Mm-hmm.
The motivation for the person receiving the land to actually end up owning the land would be so high that abuses, which will always occur, would be limited. If you abused it, you would lose that land grant. It would go to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
So the protections are built into the plan.
Mm-hmm. So, and this is, you're talking about, this bill affects state lands or city lands? Which lands are?
It affects state lands held by the Department of Land and Natural Resources.
Okay.
Those lands have always been set so that they only appear, as you point out, to go to wealthy private entrepreneurs,
mm-hmm.
not to citizens. It is time to say these lands belong to the citizens. It's time to structure a program that gets the lands to the citizens.
Mm-hmm.
You can have environmental organizations oversee this so that certain lands, which are absolutely essential to our environment and our protection, would not be available for this purpose.
Mm-hmm. Carla, you got a comment or question for Tony?
Actually, no, Carol. I just wanted to thank you for having your radio station all the time there. Appreciate all the good information you give. This is Michelle Leal. So just listening to your radio show as we go to our event.
Oh, okay. And what's that event?
It's Hot Rods for a Cause, and it's at Kalailoa today from 9 to 5.
Okay. Hot Rods for
a Cause.
A Cause, and it's out at Kalailoa?
Yeah, Hangar 110.
Hangar 110 at Kalailoa, the Hot Rods for Cause, and that's going to go from what time again?
From 9 to 5 o'clock.
9 to 5 today, and all the cars, and who's going to be there? Any good bands or anything you know of?
Actually, we just have some homegrown bands out there, but
mm-hmm.
it's pretty much over the Hot Rods as well as Swap Meet and just the community out there,
mm-hmm.
you know, enjoying themselves, good food.
And then the Kudnitsky's Kids, is this the same one with Kudnitsky's Kids Foundation?
Yes.
All right.
Actually, Hot Rods for a Cause, they're the ones that put it on, and they've chosen Kudnitsky Kids to be the recipient this year.
Okay, wow.
So thank you to the event owner
of
Hot Rods for the Cause.
9 to 5 today at Hangar 110.
Yeah, in Kalailoa.
Kalailoa, a barber's point for people from my ilk. Okay, well, thank you, and say aloha to Kudnitsky.
Okay, thank you so
right.
much.
All
aloha.
Right. Aloha. Bye.
Bye.
Well, that's the way the work of this show.
Isn't that great? That is really great.
Big NBC would say, how dare you? You break the flow.
No, that's we need to break the flow a lot. I also promised to talk about the Time is of the Essence meeting. Global warming, as you know, is increasing. The Vatican, of all places, has a scientific arm. They recently, within the last month, came out with a study that shows, from this very conservative organization, that oceans will rise up to 5 feet
mm-hmm.
in the next 10 to 25, 50 years. That will cause a situation where some 100 to 200 million people will have to be moved. It is too late now to slow down global warming or to stop global warming. the United Nations has created an adaptation fund
mm-hmm.
for how countries exist in this age of global warming and rising oceans. There's going to be a conference here in Hawaii the first week in November before the APEC conference,
mm-hmm.
with all the emphasis on the APEC conference, in which a proposal for island Pacific nations, and next early next month we're going to the UN in New York City to present, to invite other nations from around the world to join. The proposal will be finalized for the UN Adaption Fund here in Hawaii. We will go to Durban, South Africa, for the UN Conference on Global Warming, Rising Oceans, to present this concept and to have examples, projects around the world. We've been able to get many of those programs, example programs, to be hopefully done if funded here in Hawaii,
mm-hmm.
because we have people from all over the world coming here.
Mm-hmm.
So our emphasis is not like everyone else's in the state on APEC. Our emphasis is on how do we handle crisis, how do we turn the crisis into job creation for Hawaii. For example, for Pacific Island nations, we're building small houses
mm-hmm.
that are on wheels.
Mm-hmm.
As the ocean comes in, the house moves
mm-hmm.
Further inland and later can be converted to electric boats, et cetera, so that survival and sustainability can occur. Mm-hmm. It's been a great deal of fun doing this project, looking at the future, which unfortunately has come upon us much quicker than we anticipated.
What are some of the implications to Hawaii? For example, how do we fit? We know a great many of these people will be displaced. Now, what is the situation? Is there any predicted consequences that's going to impact us here directly?
Let's talk about several of them. First of all, in migration, places like the Federated States of Micronesia, you do not need a visa to come in because this was an American protectorate. And the U.S. exchanged location for those islands for defense purposes because of where they are in the Pacific for this oversight or protective status for these nations. That has, according to a move by the state, put a burden on the state to take care of these people. This plan would provide jobs for in-migrants who would come in and relieve the state of that problem. The state is alleging they spend $20 million a year over and above its regular budget. Therefore, it's very important that this would occur. Secondly, just from the global warming, our tourist industry is in the area of the rising oceans. Our bays, our Waikiki, et cetera. When you add over the time period 5 feet to the ocean levels,
mm-hmm.
if the Vatican report is correct, and by the way, 2 weeks after the Vatican report came out, the latest United Nations report using the most scientific methods ever in the history of analyzing the environment supported most of the Vatican findings. So the effects on this state
mm-hmm.
and people who live water's edge or depend on jobs water's edge will be severe. We need to start planning. There has been a fearful ignoring of the reality here. There absolutely nothing happened after the Japan crisis in the legislature
mm-hmm.
to say, my God, this terrible crisis occurred. We have to look at energy. We have to look at food production. In Micronesia, for example, they put up seawalls to stop the ocean from coming in because those islands are atolls. made of sand and coral, the ocean simply went under the seawall, into the fields, killed all the plants. We need to say, hey, what do we do about this? And the exciting thing about this meeting coming up is this will be some 25 experts will be involved in looking at how we deal with this. Hawaii is an island. We forget that.
Mm-hmm.
It is affected by rising oceans. We forget that. We turn a blind eye, and we must not. We have the capability to rebuild, to dismantle, rebuild, use interior lands in a way that we must start to do immediately.
Mm-hmm.
There are organizations, Reuse Hawaii, for example, goes in and takes down buildings, sells the material. We have, as part of the project for November, a complete reused materials that we're going to build an entire structure with, all set to go on doing that. Mm-hmm. So that we do not affect the environment. Mm-hmm. Zero carbon footprint.
Mm-hmm. This is the Carol Cox Show. I'm speaking with attorney Tony Lucretio. We're discussing global warming and other issues regarding land use and what have you. And again, before we go any further, 524-1080 if you have a question or comment. And you can pick up this at carol at carolcox.com, carolcox.com. Tony, this earlier subject we talked about, what is it that you want to encourage people to do? Who could they call? We kind of muddled that, and I want to go back and visit real quickly. Who and what do you...
Okay. There's two calls that need to be made. One to the governor's office, asking him to appoint somebody from his staff to sit down and look at the land grant program that mm-hmm. I proposed. That will take some real effort on the part of the existing government to say, here's the pros, here's the cons. But now the legislation, which is usually the biggest hurdle, is in place.
Mm-hmm.
So we can go ahead and move on this. Money from existing financial institutions, existing developers, a great deal of money coming from the lease income, as Bishop Estate did in the past, which made it the wealthiest foundation in the entire country,
mm-hmm.
Bigger than Ford, Rockefeller, etc., was done through the leasehold with very small leases in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the situation here, but the difference would be people would then, by earning points, be able to purchase the land.
Mm-hmm. All righty. Going back now to the global warming issue, and there is great discussions now about the Micronesian population impacting and taxing Hawaii's economy and resources and what have you. Can we attribute any of that so-called impact or the influx of new arrivals here directly to global warming? Have we seen any real impacts that have significant that have caused displacement of the people?
Let me first say that an extremely unfortunate thing has occurred. The lieutenant governor went to Washington at the bequest of Senator Inouye to push what appears to be taking money away from the Micronesians
mm-hmm.
in Micronesia, called the Compact, which was the exchange for defense and political position there, because of this burden on Hawaii. They did that before the investigation by the congressional office that investigates the impact.
Mm-hmm.
That investigation is going on. So we have no real evidence at that this point that there is a $20 million impact on Hawaii. They should have waited until the government accounting office did their study.
Mm-hmm.
We look very bad to Pacific Island nations by simply blundering in before the study was done. We asked for that study. Our congressional people and congressional people in Washington asked for the study, and they had the nerve at a meeting in Washington to say, oh, that's not going to change anything. So, number one, what we find is that, let's take Federated States of Micronesia. The people who are coming here appear to be employed. But like many people in Hawaii, we're underemployed. The income they receive, like people in that bottom rung of our own population, gets minimal salaries, has to work a couple of jobs, etc. The idea of having the example programs, the model programs here, would give salaries that would stop that. So we will find that to maintain the culture, if we don't do anything in these Pacific Island nations to resolve adaptation, people will want to come to an island nation, even though this is an island state. Hawaii cannot apply for the billions of dollars. There's going to be $100 billion in that UN fund, because Hawaii, contrary to many people's opinion, is not a country.
It's a state.
It's a state. And we have worked very hard to make sure that Hawaii would get some of that money, only to find that the lieutenant governor and the governor and so forth have shot themselves in the foot by alienating the Pacific Island nations. Much to their credit, they're saying, let's go ahead anyway, because I think that if there is not an impact on Hawaii, that would be miraculous, because the culture, the ability to preserve culture, and people who come here, they tend to live in the same places, et cetera. It is life or death of the culture. That is a crucial situation, and we can't simply... We've seen with the Hawaiians here the need to preserve the culture. It is no different than the Micronesians, the people from Guam, the Palau, et cetera, et cetera. They need to preserve it. And I think you're right. It will have impact.
Yeah. I recall visits that I made down to Williams and Yap and those areas, and potentially you can see... It takes just a basic thawing and elevation level of the ocean rising 2 feet, and you can see complete impacts. They're just maybe in some instances 1 or 2 feet above, if that.
The real scientific advantage we have is that these atolls feel the impact first, and therefore the programs that are done to adapt. You build on the coral structure, elevated islands. You switch from electric cars to electric boats. You do agriculture that does not go into the ground, that's supported above the ground. You have fish who move away when the water gets changes temperatures. So you need to develop those kind of very scientific. We've got a dire report that's recently come out. 1/3 of our nutrition and food comes from the ocean. And this recent study predicts the end of that food supply because of what's going on. We must take our resources and find new ways of growing fish on land, in aquariums, as part of people's sustainability, which one of the demonstrations will show exactly that. You use the fish excrement as fertilizer to grow the vegetables, et cetera, for a family of four. Those kinds of things, the technology is there. We don't need to wait for the technology. As a lawyer, I originally got into this to help the... alternative fuels, alternative vehicles. It's now, for me, very exciting, especially for an old guy like me, to be involved in sustainability. very exciting time. Mm-hmm.
Now, there's going to have to be an adjustment on everyone's part, people here, people in other places. But the population that is being impacted in the Pacific Islands, are they anyone recommending that they start focusing on a greater plant-based diet? Rather than, I mean, if you don't have the facility to raise cows and pigs and chickens, is there anything suggested in that or what?
Well, what you have to do is you have to analyze the land. There are over 200 islands in Micronesia, mm-hmm. covering a space larger than the United States. Some of those islands have elevated areas in which, if you start to organize food production, mm-hmm. cows and chickens, et cetera, mm-hmm. can exist. Some of them are uninhabited, and you have to change your resources and move people to those locations. With the billions of dollars, right now there's just a few billion dollars in that fund, but money has been pledged up to $100 billion. And if it is well used, it's going to be administered by the World Bank after we leave New York headquarters. We'll go to the World Bank and say, here are the nations who are participating in this. We want you to send a representative to Hawaii for the November meeting so that we can do things like talk about what you've just suggested. Mm-hmm. People's food, rice, vegetables, fish, are staples of the diet. The rare use of meat is already a rare use, so that the transition is not extraordinary. The transition is feasible to do.
Mm-hmm. Now, you spoke of the World Bank. There's lots of money, and you know when money is about, corruption can occur. What measures are in place that, if they take this money, are they hawking themselves in their future? Are they obligated? Is this going to be grants? Or is it World Bank loan, and are they owing to the man for the rest of their life? Or how does that work?
The general situation, you put your finger on it, is World Bank has made loans, which then has the World Bank owning that country, mm-hmm. directing what they do, et cetera, et cetera. Sometimes for the good, often for the bad. Mm-hmm. The great thing about the Adaptation Fund is that it's grants.
Mm-hmm.
It allows complete flexibility. So with one criteria, how do you adapt to this new environment the world will face? Politically, it's very unpopular to say, if you're the president of the Federated States of Micronesia, to say to your population two words, we're screwed. You must say instead, here are ways we can preserve our culture. What happens when a country has to leave its land? That country is going to dissolve.
Mm-hmm.
There are already areas of Australia, New Zealand, that are looking at transfer of Pacific Island nations. But I think if we only focus on Pacific Island nations, and one of the reasons we're opening this up to other nations, mm-hmm. in the UN, we ignore the fact that water and oceans are everywhere. When they rise, that affects everyone worldwide. That figure of 100 million to 200 million who will have to be moved is not just, mm-hmm. island nations. And we have to really look at that.
Now, what is going to happen, and this may be way beyond your knowledge or whatever, but let's say a small nation has to abandon its landmass. Just out of curiosity, has the ownership of that land or that issue been addressed? And do they, by moving, then is that land or that territory incorporated into a big basket for world body, or do they give up ownership?
Well, I think from a very practical standpoint, the land under the water, mm-hmm. belongs to the country. However, to protect it, you have China expanding its navy radically. And here's the United States taking a key ally and through Hawaii, taking money away from that key ally. China will move into the Federated States of Micronesia, as they already have, and say, gee, guys, I guess you've lost some money. Here's some money to replace that. We just want some bases here, et cetera. We have put ourselves, we've shot ourselves in the foot. The scary thing is that in Washington, at that meeting, which was attended by 20, 30 congressional representative staff, et cetera, the Department of Defense wasn't invited. They weren't there.
But the Department of Defense just sent someone to China to address the relationship.
Exactly. And what we do instead is we alienate a key, very close ally, the Federated States of Micronesia.
Hello?
Good morning, Carly. Comment or question?
I have a public service announcement for some kitty cats who need to be adopted.
You got
is this
some,
the right time to call?
You have some noise in the background, can you? You there? Okay. If you would just hold on, give me a couple of minutes. Can you call me back in about...
How about next week? Can I call you next week?
You can, or you can call me back in about another 5 minutes, and that would be good.
Oh, I have to go to my class.
Okay. All righty. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyway, the good morning, caller. Comment or question?
Yes, as far as housing goes, I should think the first step would be to get the military out of our houses and make the federal government provide them on their bases, because we just don't want to see houses everywhere.
So give me some clarity here. You're proposing what now? You suggest?
Well, he mentioned that the military are using our available housing, and so if we tell the government, please get your people out of our houses and onto your bases, then we'd have more available houses. We wouldn't have to build so many more.
I think the problem with that thought is, first of all, because our economy is so dependent on income, people who are renting those houses to the military get income from them. That income flows into our economy. But it will not solve the problem of getting people who do not have home ownership, getting them to have home ownership. We are in last place in the country when we have this resource. Home ownership gives us an identity, a stability, and an economy where we pass on that ownership to our children.
Well,
I think that if the military, and let me just tell you that the military has been moving to add military housing to the bases. They've been doing some excellent jobs on that. But the cost, if those same dollars were spent by the federal government in providing home ownership in Hawaii, that would alleviate it. When we say we don't want houses everywhere, we ignore the fact that these lands that we're talking about are dispersed all over the state. The view of that housing and home ownership would not affect the identity that is Hawaii.
Right.
But your point, I think, is a good one. Where we can, we should transfer use of housing to Hawaii residents instead of military. But if we did that suddenly, the impact on our economy would be disastrous.
Well, there's nothing wrong with renting. I mean, a lot of people, when they start out, they need to rent. Everybody doesn't need to own a house.
Except when we say there's nothing wrong with renting, and therefore Hawaii is the worst place in the country, the bulk of our people rent. They cannot afford it, and there is something wrong with renting. We misjudge who are the homeless. If we take a close look at who are the homeless, our renting policy has forced people out of homes, out into the open. They cannot afford to pay the rent. There is something wrong with just renting.
What do you mean by renting policy is too high?
The renting policy is our cost of renting is too high, way too high. People who are working two jobs, the bulk of it being tourist industry related, cannot afford to pay $1,200, $1,500, $2,000. And as their families grow, that need to have the density, when we look at the statistics, we are the most densely populated city in the United States. That is not healthy. That is not psychologically healthy. And it does terrible things for family relationships and self-image.
Mm-hmm. Why is the rent so high? Maybe that's one thing we could address.
The rent is so high because the market, the available housing, is so costly that cost must be passed on through rents, so that when we are in a position to take land bank and reduce the cost of new housing significantly, extend the home ownership base radically, then that will solve that problem.
Well, I guess the bottom line is there are too many people.
Well, that's another show call.
Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you. It's always good. The callers, I like the caliber of callers here.
I'm always impressed.
They're not calling up and yelling and screaming and, you know, giving them the microphone. It's their show. I'm just here because I got nothing else to do this morning.
Yeah.
Some say I should be running to church, but not. But anyway, on this letter, someone brought it to my attention a while back regarding this letter that was generated by our legislators that was sent to Washington. And are they still really pushing on the lieutenant governor is up there? And I didn't see them make such issue of it or publicly saying, you think we've gotten enough coverage on that?
Well, I think the problem is that you have to look at the entire picture. I think the legislative letter, the trip to Washington and so forth, was unfortunate in that the entire picture wasn't looked at. We had told the lieutenant governor's office about this conference, about the proposals, about the jobs that would go to Hawaiians, Micronesians, etc. And I believe that this short-sighted approach, if we had waited until the government accounting office did their report, then we could talk from a position of knowledge. We look foolish by saying we're not going to wait for the investigative report from the very agency that informs
Congress. Is that report out now? Or is
it is not out. It's anticipated that it would be out in November, which is fairly fast for the government accounting office. And at that point, we would have some real basis so that in the next legislative session, we're talking from hard facts other than rumors. There's an anti-Micronesian wave running through Hawaii, which is really amazing given the fact that these are island people.
It's unfortunate.
It is. And if it were based on fact instead of rumor, then that would give another credibility. It is not at this point. We're soon going to have an answer, so let's not shoot off our mouths until the program comes in.
Let's speculate, if you care, if you don't mind. What would be the benefit of being rushing to Washington? What would they have gained? I mean, was there someone threatening something here in Hawaii?
I think what happened is the governor did not get all of his programs through the legislature. And the crisis, financial crisis, continues. So they looked around for a pot of money. Mm-hmm. And it is a very small, it's under $100 million, the money that goes to the compact in Micronesia. And it represents about 30% of their economy. We taught the Micronesians to be dependent on this compact money. Mm-hmm. And without consulting with them, without getting their input, we then ran to grab that pot. Mm. I hope that I tried to reach the lieutenant governor to say, hey, you know, stand back a bit. But the appointment by Senator Inouye and his power of specifically the lieutenant governor to address this was such that there, I guess they felt they had to act. Mm-hmm. If the GAO report comes in and doesn't support this $20 million rumor, then the embarrassment will be overwhelming, but more important, the damage to the close relationship between Pacific Island nations and Hawaii will be terrible.
So it's terrible. Seems like the governor and Senator Inouye and our legislators are caught bending over to pick up a dollar, breaking the neck, and passing up 100. And that's basically...
I think that the money that would come from the UN fund, which Senator Inouye cannot access, the governor cannot access. We need the goodwill of the presidents and officials of these island nations to bring these model programs to Hawaii. They would so far out, as you point over, while they're busy picking up a dollar, they're ignoring the hundreds. And that would not only resolve the problem, but create jobs we desperately need in that bottom rung of our economy.
Right.
We need to address our own people's needs, and we're looking at it with tiny programs. The governor is trying very hard, but the crisis is too big to afford the luxury of thinking small.
Yeah.
My accusation is that we are continuing to think small here.
Okay. Well, Tony, thank you. And tomorrow I'll be joining you at the chairman's meeting at the state office.
Yeah, up until that point, you were going to be a surprise.
Oh, I let the cat out of the bag.
Or the kittens out of the bag.
But anyway, speaking of that, I appreciate you coming on, and as always, and coming when they do arrive here, the people from outer islands or outer nations. As always, this is hopefully serves as a forum for them, and I invite them to join us.
They're great fans, and I think to get first-hand information from officials from these nations would be a real benefit to your listeners. I know that the officials will be excited about coming, and I think your listeners would really like to hear from them.
Well, I'm anxious to have them join us, so thank you again, and see you.
We'll see you later.
Okay.
We're going to be talking about an auction of state recreation lands, and we're going to propose some ideas that tie in with what I've been talking about at that auction.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Okay. Very good.
And again, thank you for joining us here. A couple of things I'm going to be looking at. Speaking of money, you know the Port Royal ran aground out in Kalailoa side. I'm informed that the money, the state actually have gotten the money. Now, I don't have that report confirmed, but instead of receiving the largest sum of money that they could have, some $15 million or what have you or more, the state has chosen maybe $7 to $8 million. And the question is, what is the governor doing with that? Are they going to put it back into the resource management restoration of the coral, or is he going to spend it on his czars for a czar reality or what have you? Maybe there's a reality show of czars coming to town. But again, the Port Royal, there has been some movement on the actual settlement, and I'm going to be pursuing that and seeing where is the money and what is DLNR going to do and what is the chairman going to do? Is he going to let the money be taken and diverted, or is he going to stand up and says it's mine, a tight-fisted? So anyway, we'll talk about that, and I had invited Eric Ryan on the show for next week. I don't know if he's going to follow through with me, but I'm hoping that he does. He's the one in issue with Kimberly Pine, and I'm told that sources inform me that he was recently fired by Tom Berg. We haven't confirmed that, and there's some chaos there, and then other members of Berg's staff is fired. So see you next week, and thank you for joining me. Aloha.